Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, great show planned for you guys today. Nimesh Patel, very funny comedian. That's the guy who was at Columbia doing stand-up in the middle of his routine, was basically pulled off stage because he said some trigger words. Funny guy, talking about writing for the Oscars and Chris Rock and all that stuff, and writing for SNL. And we did a made-up movie. Good guy, funny show. We'll get to that first half. First, Oracle, NetSuite, the problem, growing businesses, and they're a hodgepodge of business systems, man. That's a problem. You got one for accounting. You got another for sales. You got another for inventory. It's a mess. Let's get NetSuite by Oracle. They do have a management software that handles all aspects of your business in an easy-to-use cloud form. Save time, money, and headaches by managing sales, finance, accounting, orders, and HR instantly right from your desktop or your phone. Puts it all in one place. The world's number one cloud-based system. The best. And right now, NetSuite is offering valuable insights with a free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/Adam. So let's try it out. Get the 7 ways, the 7 strategies to grow your profits, and check it all out at netsuite.com/Adam and get that free guide, netsuite.com/Adam. Rocket Mortgage. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home is much more than a house. That's why when you find the perfect place for you and your family, getting a mortgage shouldn't be difficult and it shouldn't get in the way. And that's why there's Rocket Mortgage. Their team of mortgage experts, number one goal is to make home buying process a smoother, easier process for you. Quicken Loans help millions of Americans achieve the dream of home ownership. And when you're ready to purchase a home, and it's the home of your dreams, well, then they can help you too. J.D. Power ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination 9 years in a row, and highest in mortgage servicing 5 years in a row. Not too shabby. Get started online at rocketmortgage.com/Adam. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. Rocket Mortgage. Right, Dawson?
Visit rocketmortgage.com/Adam and take the first step toward the home of your dreams. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, comedian Nimesh Patel. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, Chuck Heston stole from my cold dead hands from his mantra about masturbation. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Your mandate, you get it on, man. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. We look at the ratings, and we can tell when you're sharing, so thank you. Oh, good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
You're the first female Adam I've ever met.
All right, so many things to get into today. A poll. God, I have so much stuff on my plate today. I really don't know where to begin, but I'll just start with my Shroud of Turin poll.
Got a very strange call from Chris today.
Yeah, I was hoping to ask you fresh on the air, but I think we got our wires crossed a little bit. I wanted to take a poll of the group, but I was going to ask you guys on in real time. But you're accurate people who are honest, so you'll just give the same answer. I was doing what, you know, I do on Saturdays with Kaylin, is me and Kaylin
drink
came here on Saturday to clean Dylan's office, because Dylan won't clean his office, evidently, or something.
That was nice of
know.
You and Kaylin.
Well, I would like the office clean. I don't think that's it's expressible, but I don't think it's digestible mm-hmm. on Dylan's side.
Can't be synthesized.
Mm. Evidently it not. I don't know. I feel like we've talked about it mm. enough.
Might have been having Drew.
But I mean, would like would 31 be the lucky charm? Or at some point, any therapist would go, do you want Dylan's office clean? And if the answer is yes, well, then
clean
if
it.
Dylan will not clean the office, and Gabe's coping mechanism for cleaning the office was to move because I'd asked him to clean the office. So Gabe, what you're dealing with Gabe is a guy who plays video games while I'm standing in front of him. And then when I explain to him, why are you playing video games when I'm standing in front of you? He then points out in his touche moment, the web's down. We can't, can't use the internet.
Never a better time to clean.
Then I say, well, then why don't you just clean your office like I've been asking you to do since you got some free time? He then explains that he shares the office mm-hmm. with other people. I then ask if he could grit it off and somehow figure out how much office he was. Now, Gabe's bigger than Dylan and some of the other guys as well, so we'd have to do a water displacement test to figure out how much volume he was taking.
Yeah. Proportionally.
Well, he could clean the whole office, which is 6 foot by 11 foot long. It's as big as a medium-sized walk-in closet, but okay, we'll cordon off your third and just have you clean that part then. That appeared to be offensive to Gabe in some way, and so he left. So he's now moved to another place where he never has to deal with this insanity of
problem solved.
The guy who owns the office asking him to clean it. Dylan evidently won't clean the office or won't do it to whatever my satisfaction is. So since Dylan won't do it and Gabe has moved out, that just leaves me and Saturday. Mm. So I told Kaylin to meet me over here on Saturday, and we went through the office and the front office, mm-hmm. Dylan's office, and the other offices.
Saturday night's all right for cleaning.
Well, my life is I met the new theater guy, Nick, Saturday morning at my house to keep going with the theater that Peter was working on, my home theater.
I thought you were doing a musical.
I was going to say.
No, I have to build my home theater that no one in my house will be involved with except for me, and now I have to get a new guy.
Well, they'll sit in it.
Oh, no, when I'm done, they'll use it, and I'll have to clean up. But
do you have little stadium seats?
Yeah, I'm working on, I'm like a riser and a recliner and the whole nine yards. Yeah, it's going to be world class, but I got the new theater guy Nick over there because Peter's gone off to college. So my schedule for Saturday is I meet Nick in the morning at my house, and then we work on the theater until he's sort of sufficiently lined out. Then I come over here and I meet Kaylin, and we clean here during the afternoon, and then that night I'm at the Comedy Store in the main room. So I got a lot of rain.
Cleaning? Yeah.
Rich man, poor man.
I should have tidied up. That's my life.
Yeah.
Now, look, it's good. I like to live in a world where, let's say, my wife would handle the theater and maybe Dylan would clean his office, but that's not the world we live in. And I want a theater and I want a clean office. So at a certain point, one must do these things themselves.
Wrest control from the hands of fate.
You end up getting a little stronger for it, though.
Mm. And a little cleaner for sure.
Would you like to know the other side of the street to the guy who gets stronger when he does do it?
What happens?
The people that don't do it, they atrophy a little
interesting.
Bit. Interesting. Yeah. Yes, people are sort of like, why do you do so much shit? Or how can you do so much shit? Or how do you do so many things at once? And the answer is because I do these things. Yep. It's right in the title. You just go do it.
Give it to a busy person.
You'll get better. But anyway. Yeah. So Kaylin and I had a romantic Saturday cleaning the office. Many of the things I found were interesting. Like I found a Ziploc pouch, sandwich bag filled with like pictures from my childhood and old houses and stuff like that, stuff we used from making the book and stuff like that. And I was like, all right, well, this doesn't need to be in Dylan's office. This can go somewhere. I'll put this in the picture box at the other shop or whatever it is and start pulling out a bunch of stuff. But one thing we pulled out was this like mosaic cloth, a tapestry or something. It's like a long cloth. It was, 22 inches high by 4 foot, 5 foot across.
Like a little runner.
Like rolled up. Yeah. And it's the kind of thing you'd hang on a wall. And it looked exactly like something that Lynette's family had had. So I thought, well, since anything goes, See, here's the problem. When the radar detector cord and the jump rope are all mixed, all tied up together and put on an upper shelf, then who's to say what should be in here and what shouldn't be in here?
It could be anything.
It could be anything at this point. And so also I found the family pictures in the Ziploc bag. Yeah. So I'm like,
all bets are off
as to what's in this office. There's no way to find out unless you clean the office.
Right.
So Kaylin and I were doing that. So I found this thing and I said, oh, this must be Lynette's family, whatever. And so I then took the things that I thought were Lynette related and I piled them up to take them home and set them on the downstairs, whatever, when you walk through the garage. It's a sort of thing where you can kind of view it. Should this then go upstairs and be hung on a wall? Is this in fact yours? If it's not yours, I don't know whose it is. Call early. Monday morning, Dylan has lost his shroud. Now I'm getting texts from Kaylin, which of course I'm over the moon about at 8:30 in the morning. Dylan wants his shroud back. Okay.
That's a text.
Job one, man. Woo! I jumped up. I was in a cold sweat. I was like, I hope this kid isn't pissed. I borrowed his shroud. Tell him it was a mistake.
Text on the eBay listing.
Now you take your hat and hold it with both hands and say, Mr. Wren.
You got to ring it.
I didn't know. And cover your own ass.
Yeah.
Do this thing where it's like, I said ask Dylan first, and he ripped it out of my hands and screamed he was going to fire me if I didn't give him the shroud to take home. So we found out urgently that the shroud was now in my possession, and it was not, in fact, Lynette's.
And Dylan referred to it as a shroud.
No, he did not. Oh, okay. Tapestry. I don't know. What would we call it?
I called it like an oriental tapestry.
Right.
That's
so
we say that?
Now we got a serious situation here because that thing has to be transported safely back to Dylan's office so it can be balled up and shoved in a shelf. So I then announce, okay, I shall return with this shroud,
Post-haste. This
tapestry.
You got halfway here and you were running.
What time
doesn't
did
make
you,
any sense?
What time did you send me the text, Dylan? Sorry, Kayla.
It's about 8:30 in the morning.
Oh my God!
All right. So I'm looking at this text and I'm like, all right. Now Lynette is gone and Lynette has come here, so someone must have got hold of Lynette. Mm-hmm. Because it's not where I put it.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know if she collected it and took it back or Olga put it away or where it is. But someone must have got hold of Lynette. It's urgent that you get this beach towel back to put in a corner, right?
Can we see it?
Yeah, you may.
Let's bring it
I'd
in.
Love to
I
see
guess.
What all the fuss is
I don't.
About.
Dylan, I would suggest you bring that home if it's important because I don't feel like it's being displayed.
Let's see the thing.
Do you want it? Do you want to bring it home or do you have it here?
He's chit-chatting.
No. Do you have it?
Seems heated.
Yes? No?
Yeah, we have it. We're getting it.
Is it a family heirloom?
Was it bequeathed to you?
Hold on. Dawson, where's your shroud and why isn't it proudly displayed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's like a scene.
Yeah, I don't call that an oriental something.
That's a table runner. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a runner.
I mean, I have no idea what that is. Ask Christy.
Some people, Lynette has something that's very similar to that that was hung on the wall.
Okay.
Means something. I don't know. Great Nanas or something. I don't know.
It's a nice
Dylan Pitts
mandolins.
Renaissance
he's
scene.
Upset, yeah.
What's he upset about?
You're just a little hard on him for this whole office thing. And the
What am I being hard? What is the hard part on me?
Well, he doesn't. Okay.
Thank you, Caleb. And this, as,
he does a lot of work for the show. He really pours his heart out and puts everything into the show. He doesn't organize his
Okay,
office.
He works hard for the show.
Yeah.
Okay, and you don't work hard or Brian doesn't work hard or I don't work hard or everyone
I work
works
hard. Brian works.
Yeah. Okay, he works hard for the show.
Brian works.
Okay. What's that have to do with cleaning his office or not cleaning his office?
No, as far as just the morale here is just getting very low with all this office cleaning. It's worrying me too. Yeah.
Well, how should we resolve this office cleaning thing?
I called you that day. It's on me. I should be assigning it to people. And it.
But didn't I tell Dylan to clean his office?
I don't know if you personally told Dylan to clean his office or not.
Okay, Dylan, is your morale low? Do you want to take some time off?
I'm confused because if you do think I'm as fucking lazy and atrophied and stupid as you think I am, then fire me.
Okay, would you like to be fired?
I would like to have a job here where my work is respected and people don't scream at me on air for a fucking radar cord that I didn't put on a shelf, but fire me if you think I'm this stupid.
Okay, well, let's take some time off. Why don't we do that? We'll figure out the rest, if you'd like that. First off, I don't think I'm screaming at anybody. I think I've made my opinion pretty
clear
that I would like the office clean.
Yeah.
You may not have taken the radar cord and wrapped it up with the
jump rope.
That may be the other person I asked to clean the office. But it's still in your office. It's not being cleaned, so thus I can't find it. What am I confused about here? Other than morale is low, what is the Brian? What would your take on this be?
I wasn't around for when you did have this conversation off the air, and you did refer to yourself as not screaming, but you were
animated.
Animated. I don't know what the situation was. I don't know if you were.
Why do you think I was animated?
Oh no, I think you're justified.
Well, what is this, what part of this is really me being unreasonable, Dawson? You have thoughts?
I don't think you're being unreasonable.
I would like the office cleaned. If I made that point on several occasions,
yes.
Could one clean the office, I guess, would be the answer.
Yeah, it can be cleaned. As I said, that it's on me. I should be the one assigning it.
Why can't Dylan clean the office he works out of?
Well, as you said, like when you were up there, there's a lot of stuff there that nobody knows if they can throw it away, if they can move it. It's all old. Like stuff that is back there from when Donnie was here. Like we don't, it's electrical stuff. It's video stuff. Like it looks too valuable to just throw away.
All right. It's not cleanable.
It's not cleanable, but there's still you're still going to find things there that nobody really knows what to do with. And that room was always had that stuff for years. So it's like, why would we move it if it's been in there?
Okay. That's the place for it. We're just going to have to move buildings or.
Yeah.
This is not. So when I give the speech about cleaning the office and I say there'll be items that we won't be able to identify, put those in a box that says I don't know and I will make a decision on that.
I will tell you this.
Not cover that aspect of office cleaning?
I have a new world order here that I'm bringing on to the staff, implementing to the staff, yeah. And it does involve that and involves all the junk we have here and it should take care of it.
I will say, I think if I could give you just some friendly advice, I think everyone here does a good job of taking care of their shit. Like most people's stuff isn't a disaster, but there's a lot of stuff around here, like Chris was alluding to, that just finds its way here, or no one knows where it came from or what it's for. And I don't think a lot of people, I don't feel empowered to make the decision like that's got to go, that stays, that yes. You know what I mean, like that belongs in the shop.
Okay. So the part where I say,
splitting hairs,
ask me what we should do with this stuff if you don't know where it goes, doesn't that sort of remedy that?
That would, yeah.
Well, I wasn't,
but I will be the part that I will be the guy who answers that too, because I'll know.
All right. What I'm saying is there is an influx of junk.
Indeed.
We don't know if some of it's going to be kept. We don't know if some of it is going to be thrown out. Mm-hmm. Some of it's going to be used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with that in mind, every once a month, one could go through that process of sorting through that stuff.
No, part of my new
inventory
thing, yeah.
Right. The question is, Dylan is upset and offended, but what I'm saying is I got into it with those guys months ago. Could you clean your office? Nobody got into it.
But you're right. So what happened was Dylan and Gabe and even Emmy would use that office. And then ever since you had that first initial thing, only person who works in there now is Dylan. And Dylan, he comes in, he goes straight to work. He's here first. He's handling a lot of the production stuff.
I understand he does things.
Yeah, I know.
I'm asking, can you clean your office as amongst those things for an hour once a month?
Yeah, that's
fair.
Or
an hour every 4 months?
Yeah.
Probably less than an hour once a month.
Yeah.
Could that be included?
That should be included, and it is included moving forward.
Do you know how much shit I do that's just sort of ancillary shit? I don't ever accuse anyone of that. You don't think I'm funny or you don't think I work hard? I fucking work hard and I clean Dylan's office. Yeah. It's a side. It's one of the many side things I do, which everyone can do and is capable of doing. I don't think my asking Dylan to clean the office, always with the do it while you're here, don't do it on the weekend, don't stay late, just do it while you're on the clock. I don't feel
that. No, that you're totally that's
an
that's
out
totally
of
fair.
Line. Whatever.
What feels out of line is you're putting it all on just him when it's literally everybody's mess.
Okay, but he's the only one who's in the office.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've asked it in front of you 13,000 times too. I'm not putting it all on him. I put it on Gabe, and Gabe left. And then the last man sitting was Dylan in the office.
Yeah.
All right. Yes, I'm putting it all on him. The office is 6 foot wide by 11 foot long. It's a walk-in closet.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying what I think why he's feeling down about this is because it wasn't all his to begin with. He just happened to be the last man standing. Okay. And everybody still kind of just, whenever they get something new, they just throw it in there still. Like, it's like he'll walk in and there's just new trash in there. Like,
well, perhaps he should have a discussion with one of his coworkers about not putting stuff in his office.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not saying that this wasn't going to require a conversation or some effort.
I know.
Dylan, Kalen showed up here. I met him here at 1 o'clock and I left after an hour and it was pretty much taken care of.
Kalen with thrombosis and a new baby showed up.
But also Kalen is the de facto cleaner of the warehouse now. That's been discussed because we stopped having the cleaners come in. So Kalen will do it. He gets paid more. So there's that too.
Okay.
Perhaps the morale isn't being helped by doing this on the air.
Okay, I'm just saying. I'm asking if we could clean the office.
No, that's totally fair. I'm just saying why are people thinking, or why are they sad? I'm letting you know why I think they're feeling this way. That's all.
Because it's Dylan's job to clean the. I mean, it's Kalen's job to clean the office.
It's not Kalen's job to clean the office, but you're saying Kalen came in on a Saturday and he helped clean. Well, that was part of his deal.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not calling him a hero. I came in as well. We both cleaned.
Yeah, you're the hero.
Well, I want a clean office. Dawson, I don't know. Do you feel like we could get around this conversation? How, Dawson, you got a lot of street savvy. How do you think we could avoid this conversation?
You know, when I worked with my uncle installing kitchen appliances,
yes.
If I didn't hand him the right tool before he needed it, I got screamed at. I think people here could see a lot of that, and it's not like they really have to read into what you want, because you do tell them.
Fairly clear.
There's a lot of downtime around here. Well, it's a lot of downtime.
I don't need them to do it that day.
Right.
I was in here on Wednesday, and I came in on Wednesday looking for my radar detector cord. I found it. I gave a small... had a small tantrum about why can't we clean the office because I now found my radar cord tied up in my jump rope. And then I left on Wednesday and I went out of town. And then I came back on Monday and the office had not been touched. And then we had another discussion about cleaning of the office. And then I came in the following Saturday with Kalen. Right. So there's a good chunk of time in there to... approach this situation. I don't know. Break it off into chunks. Do 20 minutes on a Monday and 20 minutes on a Wednesday and 20 minutes on a Friday. I think an hour would get it done.
I will say, as someone who has struggled my entire adult life and childhood with making some easy tasks seem way bigger than they are, like, Kalen, hey, Kalen, are you still there? And Dylan, if you're listening, if you're still under this roof, I will help you. Hold on a second. Remember when I said if I was mayor or a new mayor or a new governor or a new someone, all you have to do is just make a couple cosmetic improvements right away, and people are like, wow, that guy's making changes, and it's not much. Like, you know, paint the buses, polish the street signs, whatever. You know, it's just some little change, and it's like, oh, this guy's really on top of things. Just go to Home Depot, get like 10 clear plastic bins. They're probably $3 each. Put a little label on them. Say, like, you know, cords, whatever, battery, whatever those things are, and just start putting stuff in bins. That's such a simple start to the fix. You're just putting stuff in bins and making it look organized. And it is kind of organized. You've got a handle on what's in there.
How could you get to the Home Depot?
It's 300 yards away. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Pizza okay. Dawson, this also sounds like an insane conversation to you, right?
Yes.
Okay. Might I suggest this, everyone? Please compartmentalize. When I ask you to clean your office, I'm not calling you dumb or lazy, and I'm not suggesting you don't work. Mm. I'm asking you to clean the office. There's something that's going on with the younger generation about, you don't know what I do around here. Like, you don't think I think everyone here works. And I'm asking you to clean your office periodically. They're two separate things. I don't know why it should affect your performance.
How dare you?
How does organize your office, how does that factor into me not thinking you work?
Well, the only thing we hear a lot of the times from you, I mean, not saying that you need to compliment us all the time, but it's a lot of complaining. I mean, that's kind of your thing too, but it's just we hear a lot of why you're upset with us. We don't really...
You want more praise.
Yeah, yeah, I can use some praise, yeah.
But don't you think if you clean the office on the 35th time I asked you to do it, it would help steps toward
rain
that?
Rain down praise upon you.
Toward that goal?
I'm going to find out.
What about never cleaning? What about never doing what I'm asking you to do? Don't you feel that interrupts the praise
pipeline?
Do you think that might hinder our praise a little bit?
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay. I do tell you when things are typoed or things I want done. I also say when someone comes up with something funny or a good idea, I think I point that out.
In that hypothetical scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'd like to put a microscope on what I guess could be called the body language of losers. Mm. You asked three of them to clean their office and two just moved out.
I guess so.
Dawson.
Oh, man.
I guess, from the three-point line. Dylan is gone. Dylan has left the building, and Gabe left the building, too, after asking to clean the office.
Wow.
Okay.
That's not a good sign, yeah.
Well, I look.
He left his shroud.
He left the shroud.
He left his precious shroud.
It's a nice
Caitlin,
piece.
Go bring him his shroud.
Now, the shroud talk then comes back to.
Anyone know if it's like an antique or a family heirloom? Or why is he, why was he
where
so
was it, Caitlin?
It was up on the shelf in Dylan's office.
Wrapped up?
Yeah, kind of wrapped up like that, but maybe two more times.
All right.
Tightly rolled.
But not displayed.
Correct.
All right. Now, my feeling is display it or bring it back to your house and display it. It's just one more.
Display right now.
Tchotchke.
Well, you know that part where we don't know what things are, what they do, as Maxipad has alluded to? The part where we're not sure what to do with stuff?
That would fall under that category for me.
It certainly did for me because I brought it back to Lynette.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is there's always going to be some of that stuff, but I'd say if we cut down on it, and shrouds, I think we could do.
Look, I'm all for this. Trust me. I talked to Fondelier Gary this morning. We have a plan that we are gonna set upon.
Okay, well, make sure and write it down in double space, large
it
font,
no
and then
typos.
Present it to. I want to go over it with Garagos.
Yeah,
or people could organize their office without me knowing.
We got to redline it.
There's that too. But okay.
It's a step in the right direction, I think.
Important step.
Anyway, this then led to the shroud. The shroud is, I said, when we were going over the show rundown today, I said to Max Apata, did Dylan get back his Shroud of Turin? And he said, I don't know about that. And I said, oh, are you not in on the Dylan Shroud story? You do not know what the Shroud of Turin is. And he said, I don't know what the Shroud, I don't know what that reference is. Or I don't know that, I haven't heard of that. And then I thought, I thought everyone had heard of that. So then I did a quick see. Who has heard of the Shroud of Turin? Where is the break? Do we have the breakdown?
I have it right here.
Oh, okay. Read us the Shroud of Turin.
All right. So for yes. Who
no, I want the actual... I want to know the description of the Shroud of Turin is what I was asking. We're going to need the kind of legal...
What do you want to know?
Brian has Google open and ready.
It was the shroud placed over Jesus's death mask or whatever.
It's his burial shroud after the crucifixion, and supposedly his burial shroud. I can't prove it, obviously.
Right.
Supposedly it has his visage imprinted on his image or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a holy item.
Yeah. Okay. So Max Bad did not know what the Shroud of Turin was.
Yeah.
And I said, do I know something about this? And then I thought, what is the average? So where are we at? Brian, you've heard of the Shroud of Turin. Gina Graff.
All I had was, I've heard of it. I think it has something to do with Jesus.
That counts.
Dawson.
I got it, but I said that some lady wiped Jesus' face with it.
Yeah, but the term Shroud of Turin,
absolutely,
you had of heart. All right, where are we at with the rest of our group?
Matt Fondelier said he's heard of it. He thought it was like something from the Book of Mormon.
The musical?
No, the actual book. Right. Let's see. Gary, he says he's heard of it, although didn't know what it was. Same with DeAndrea. He's heard the term, but couldn't tell us anything about it. Then the no column, it's Kalen, Emmy, me, Dylan, Gabe, and Sarah at the other shop.
Kalen, Emmy,
me, Dylan, Gabe, and Sarah.
No surprises on that list. Although Dylan, I feel like Dylan,
you know, I think
maybe.
It's semi-obscure, though, right?
Dylan went to a religious school.
It's true.
I also went to a religious school.
Well, no, it is semi-obscure. But the first five people we asked knew what it was. That's not the biggest river in Hungary or something. You know, like this is. It is. Yeah. It is trivia.
It's a thing.
I don't know if I call it semi-obscure. I we're kind of split on this. I feel like the people I figured would know did know. Mm. I'd assumed you would know.
Well,
why would I know you would know? You're good at that stuff. But I assume that you two would know. Part of it's part of an age thing, too, I think.
Probably.
Right?
Well, it's a Catholic high school.
Oh, you did?
I most certainly did not.
Well, I went to Catholic high school, and I really... There were never any lessons on the Shroud of Turin. So
no, there never think, any. I never got I a lesson a in the Shroud factor. Of Turin. The reason it's I know trivial. What it is because it's just out. It's kind of out.
Right.
It was.
We've
discussed.
Lived long enough to know that 15 years ago there was a news story on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
is it
right.
real or is it from the medieval times or whatever?
All right. So the hot temp talk, which is had a discussion. A discussion with my daughter in the hallway last night, which was hot. She's like me. She runs hot. She does not like to sleep when it's hot.
Yeah.
Has difficulty sleeping when it's hot. The temp read 81 degrees in the hall where the thermostat was, so it was warm.
That's warm.
She's got a ceiling fan that helps. The air conditioning was on the fritz on our side of the building, sort of thing, on the bedrooms, the zone where her bedrooms were, and blah blah blah. The good news for all the people that are like, oh, cry me a river with your four zones, two and a half of them are always out. So for all the people that think like, oh, this guy's got it made, he's got four zones. I do have four zones. One is constantly not working. So it's not really you have the expense of the zone minus the zone. So I was working. So I had gone over to the thermostat and I was attempting to turn it on. I got to replace them, but all thermostats are like totally counterintuitive. Like they don't even light up when they're on. They should have a little red light that comes on when it's hot, you know, heat, and blue light that comes on. It's like, you're like, is this on? And you're listening and you have to go walk by the vent and shit. Like, couldn't they just put a fucking thing? Like so many of them don't even have lights. Mm. The one that's in here, I had to pull the fucking door off of because when the door's shut, there's one button on the outside that controls nothing. And you're like, you keep pushing it and pushing it, going, why is it turning on? And then you go, oh, you got to open the door.
Yeah. No, 14 button panel back there.
Knowing your relationship with technology, I know this is playing with fire. No pun intended. You got to get the Nest.
I know.
I have the Nest.
I'm working
the Nest
on.
Is beautiful.
Life changing.
In between the theater and cleaning Dylan's office, somewhere in there, I will horseshoe in the Nest. I will work on
Worth
that.
Worth it.
So I Then
that turns orange when it's heat and blue when it's cold.
When you walk by it, lights up.
So I'm standing outside the room and I'm trying to futz with it to get it turned on. Now, what I know is when you set that thermostat for like 76 or even 77 and it kicks on, when it gets from 81 to 76, it's quite comfortable. I don't know why exactly. I don't know that 76 feels warm, but it's not. I know it. So it's set on 72. I'm, you know, what Natalia likes to do and what Lynette used to do is just crank it all the way down, but it doesn't work.
No,
it's
a get those
fucking,
icicles going.
Don't do that.
You're pushing the cross the street button over and over and over again. You're pushing the elevator floor button over and over. And if it ever does kick on or does work, it'll just run until it freezes up.
You're going to break it.
Yep.
And I've tried to explain to everybody, it doesn't get to 71 faster if you put it to 55. Mm-hmm. It just goes. Just put it to where it's comfortable, and if it does end up working, it won't run all night or whatever it is.
The air that comes out is just as cold, whether you set it to 55 or 75. If it's 81, it's just going to go on for another hour and a half.
And what it'll do is it'll run indefinitely because you'll never get it to 60.
That's an extreme example.
You guys are treating it like it's a pot of water you're trying to boil, and it's a burner. Come on, turn it up. Let's get this going. You turning it to 60 doesn't get it to 72 fast, doesn't get it from 82 to 72 faster. It just goes past that, runs all night. It's freezing at 4 a.m. because it's now 61 degrees in your room. And I have to have this insane discussion a lot. So I was standing in the hall and Natalia's exacerbated. She says, I'm hot, and I'm like, oh honey, I'm trying, don't turn it up. I said, it's not running. She's like, I'm burning up. I love that when people, it's a great thing, it's a beautiful female gene. You explain what's happening to you and then you get to yell at the person who's trying to fix what's happening to you because this is happening to you. It's like, I'm burning up in there, and I'm like, I get it. I'm attempting to fix. Don't turn it down.
I'm literally boiling to death.
And so we're standing at each other, yelling at each other in the hall. And I'm saying, please listen to me. I know I'm trying to fix it. It's not running. She's like, don't turn it up. Don't turn it up. It's not working. It doesn't matter. So she goes and slams the door. And then I have to go in there and explain that you're not allowed to talk to me that way when I'm trying to fix the fucking thermostat. And then I was like, God damn. And I remember hearing this thing from the California resources, whatever, and they're like, here's the recommended settings for when you're at home, and here's the one when you're away from home, and here's during the day, and here's at night. At night, according Max Zapata to the what? Oh, he's not in here.
He's talking to the guests right now.
Oh, okay. He's got to find the board or the California Board of energy or something like that.
Department of Energy. Or
you can find just, or you find it, or tell him to just tell him to come back here and find that paper or the official. I'll do. I'll hit this one. Teencounseling.com. Good.
Nice. I got it for Natalia.
I wish there was a counselor on the other side of that door. She was slamming on me. It's always interesting. Like everyone's always like, well, okay, listen, you're trying to help, but how are you expressing that? It's like, I'm expressing it by saying I'm trying to fix this. Do you have to yell at me while I'm
doing the thing?
While I'm trying to fix it, do you have to yell?
Right.
While I'm trying to fix it.
Not helpful.
And by the way, if I'm ever in my den and somebody wants to push a vacuum cleaner and tell me I should lift my feet off the ottoman, I won't scream at them. I'll say thank you for vacuuming my den.
That's fair.
So if you need some teen counseling, you can connect your 13 to 19-year-old with a licensed professional counselor where they spend their time on a smartphone. Starts with a short questionnaire to help them understand your teen and their needs. Then you're matched with an available therapist and you can start communicating within 24 hours. You can review their credentials and directly communicate with the counselor. Make sure it's a good fit, easy and free to change your counselors if needed. More affordable than traditional counseling, and financial aid is available. And you can visit teencounseling.com/Corolla. Help your teen take charge of their mental health. Boy, man, today, man, whoo! your kid's on the internet or watching the news, come on now. You got to do something for the brain, man. They're mine. Adam Carolla Show listeners get 10% off the first month at teencounseling.com/Carolla. All right. So the recommendations from what? The California Energy Board or something?
Oh, it's more than that. It's Energy Star, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and the U.S. Department of Energy.
Ooh. Recommendations for thermostat setting at night when you're going to bed.
82 degrees.
Oh, whoa. My God.
I was standing in the goddamn hall. It read 81, and Natalia had pulled a sock off, mopped her brow with sweat, and threw it at my head like a salty Molotov cocktail.
Do they want to be taken seriously? Why don't they just put a number? Like, we all instantly like laughed or guffawed at that number. Like, it's absurd. Like, why not just say 77 and everyone can be happy?
What is the National Sleep Council? Like, these are the people, the doctors in charge of a good night's sleep. What
is the
optimal?
National Sleep Foundation, the president of Neurology and Sleep Medicine, and sleep.org all say that 65 degrees is ideal.
Now 65. We're talking. Can we split the difference at least?
No, my feeling is that's what fucking blankets are for, man. Pull one over you.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if you want to run that all night. Yeah,
yeah. I agree. I thought it was chick talk. Like, Lynette gets a cold forehead.
Oh, no. I love an icy cold room when I sleep.
Oh, baby.
I got that fan going.
Can we just fucking put an end to this charade with you and this what's
dance.
His nose
this crazy
and Lynette
dance.
And all this shit? Come on, man.
Oh, I have a kid now.
You're in there fucking baking.
Oh,
it's a cooking
up a storm. Low-carb
cookies.
I made homemade stroganoff over the weekend.
Oh.
How many zones you got in your pad?
One.
Would you like four?
I would.
Two and a half don't work?
I sure would. I'd sleep
Step
under the dining room
up.
Table.
Adam Can you like, clean an office on a Saturday?
Like nobody's business.
All right.
Adam was like Jack Nicholson at the end of The Shining. Icicles on his nose.
So, I then I realized 82. And now, then I started to kind of think about it. Like, okay, this is the government. Now, we live in California. We ain't too far away from the government controlling your thermostat.
They're already telling you what days you can water.
There are many, many, many things that you would have thought many years ago were insane. Like, no fucking way. Like, if you would have told the founding fathers, like, well, if you want to build on your property, you got to ask the government if you can cut down a tree or if you have to put fencing around a tree to protect
my property outside your house.
Yeah, they would have been, they would have thought that was insane. This isn't that insane. And the problem with the government is they got it at 82, which is, I get you do save kilowatts at 82, but you're sweating your ass off at 82 because 65 is optimal. I would also argue that unintended circumstances, you're going to get a whole bunch of people that had a rough night's sleep, and they're going to be driving to work, and they're going to be commuting, and they're going to be working, and there's going to be a lot of mistakes and injuries.
Groggy
and
or annoyed.
Frayed
or
nerves.
Right. There's going to be a lot of fist fights on the 405 and a lot of rear-ending as well. So there's that. Also, can't we just build a nuclear power plant and get this fucking over with? Okay. All right. So there was that. I have much more to get into. So So we're done with the shroud talk.
Somebody needs to get the shroud out of here.
Well, the problem with not doing...
I want to know what the significance is of the shroud.
We never found out.
The problem with not doing things in a timely fashion is... you may never organize your office, and that may work for 100 years, or I may be feverishly looking for my cord for my radar detector and find it. So you're kind of running the risk of that.
Yeah.
And then when that happens, that is going to spawn an argument because there's already a discussion about it, and there's a frustration level there. And then it is going to spawn bringing home the shroud and think you're leaving the door open to possible negative outcomes is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So I found out the significance of that shroud.
Please. What is it?
It's a Lynette's mother's from Italy. So it is Lynette's.
What?
But Dylan was holding on to it for Lynette for something, or he was doing something with it for Lynette.
The plot is so thick right now.
He's going to
frame it or something.
Oh, so he was going to do it on Monday?
This is uncomfortable.
Was it a surprise?
I don't know.
I
can't ask him right now.
Okay.
Was it a surprise for Lynette, or does Lynette know?
Lynette told him to go do it.
It was like for her birthday.
I'm going to guess. What's the over-under on how long that's been on the top shelf balled up at the office?
Treating this very lightly.
I don't know. RJ Bell's calling in tomorrow. We can
what do we all think the over-under is?
Oh, man.
Are we into months or years, weeks?
This year, sometime in 2019.
Well, the office hasn't been cleaned in many months, so we don't know. So my weird, and by the way, it'd be nice if I got more information because I'm like, well, it looks just like Lynette's shroud. And it's like, that's Dylan's shroud. It's like, what's Dylan doing with a shroud that looks like Lynette's shroud? I don't know, but evidently he had the same shroud. Oh, it's an Oriental motif. No, it's Elizabethan.
And I had the under on 45 shrouds being said today. Just blew it, man.
Damn it.
I thought it was a safe bet.
All right, so this is Lynette telling Dylan to do the shroud and it sitting up there.
And then so you brought it back with it not in a frame, so he needed it back.
To ball up and put back on top of the shelf, never to be seen again?
Possibly.
Okay. Now, what I'm saying is when Dylan says...
It's a nice piece.
Dawson, when Dylan says, hey, man, I didn't take your radar detector cord and ball it up with your jump rope and put it on the shelf, my answer is, I'm not accusing you of that. I'm accusing you of it being 3 feet above your head every day and you never cleaning the office. I'm not saying you did that. What I'm saying is whether it's cleaning the office on the weekend or doing one of many different activities, one doesn't always have to do things that are just for them.
Like I understand.
When Gabe was upset that I asked him to clean more than 33% of the office, one could expand up to 40 or 50%. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're allowed to walk down the street and pick up a wrapper that's not from your candy bar.
I guess.
Yeah, you used to get mad at me for walking by coffee mugs that weren't mine, but that were half filled with coffee. And now I walk by them, I throw them away. I don't care.
Like
he's
split.
He's empowered.
I dump them anyway.
I would say, look, it's not your coffee mug that's sitting on the sink half full with coffee. But if you've been here for 2 hours and you walk past it, you could give it a rinse.
Yeah.
It's your office. It's our office.
That's fine. I'm not asking anyone to do anything I don't do all day. Here's what I'm worried about. When you have kids, that's your whole fucking life is doing a whole bunch of shit that you're not. That's your whole life is doing a bunch of that. It's a maturity thing.
Yeah.
It's good. It's difficult otherwise. All right. Let's see. Who's here? Our guest here?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Nimesh is here.
Nimesh Patel. Nimesh is the one that was like famously basically asked to leave the stage of the college.
Yeah,
or
Columbia.
For no particularly good reason, because we watched the video.
Well, he threatened the audience.
Oh, yeah. He did throw a bottle at the audience.
All right. Do we have that vid?
Yes, we do.
All right. Should we play it? Well, maybe should we play it in front of Nimesh?
Yeah, let's play it with him. Let's talk about it with him.
All right. We'll do that right after this.
Friday night in Portland, don't miss a live taping of CarCast with Adam Carolla, Matt DeAndrea, and special guest Mario Andretti. 6:30 p.m. Friday night at World of Speed Motorsports Museum in Portland. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com. In the spirit of Murrow, Jennings, Cronkite, here's another great moment in local news.
A dream come true for all you fans of Breaking Bad.
Yes, a sequel to the hit show is coming out.
Still a lot of details, though, unanswered. The Walter White detail, but we do know it focuses on Aaron Paul's character, Jesse Pinkman.
Okay, but that's not Aaron Paul that we're looking at there. So
that wasn't.
It'd be interesting to see where he fits in and all that. But if it's anything like the first one, woo-hoo, that was really good.
I gotta catch up.
You got a long way to go.
I got a lot.
That's a long series.
I told some. Yeah, I know.
That's a great moment in local news. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Nimesh Patel is here. Not Nimesh.
Yes, sir.
Nimesh Patel is here. Has an owl mount. Head Nimesh in charge.
Yes, sir.
We'll talk about that in a moment. So famously asked to leave the college stage at Columbia after being offensive, I guess. What was the... I remember the story, but I don't remember all the details.
It was November of 2018. I was doing a college show at Columbia's Asian American Alliance. And about, let's say 20 minutes into the set, I tell a joke that... was about how you no one would choose to be gay if they're already black, because it's already difficult to be gay. It's difficult to be black. Who's going to sort of double down on that?
Furthering the point of the event.
Right.
And yes.
And then about 3-4 minutes later, the people that organized the event were like, they came on stage and were like, hey, we need you to go. And then we had a back and forth for about 2 minutes, which felt like 20. And then they cut my mic and I left. And then it was a whole kerfuffle.
We're the thing that's interesting about the super woke time we're living in is making a joke at a group's expense, gay, black, Polish, or whatever's a no-fly zone. The problem is you can't even make a joke defending the group.
That's the point.
Yeah.
By mentioning the group that you're defending, that's become a no-fly zone because these people are knee-jerky and they don't have any kind of sophistication in the comedy keywords. Department. And I was sitting around a hoity-toity Carmel Valley car event at the Quail Lodge with a bunch of white people, and I had the exact same thing.
Tons of racial jokes getting flown around.
Everyone's just sitting there in bad suede loafers, and some guy's going, oh, I had a Maserati 5300, it was a 55, double bubble Zagato, whatever, and then another guy's like, I had a Duesenberg, but I sold it, and at some point I stopped. I went, this is exactly what black people think white people do all day. Like, everyone's sipping champagne, and the dumb chick at the table's like, oh, no, okay. And I was like, no, I'm not making fun of black people. I'm making fun of, no, okay, we heard you. We heard you. That's enough. That's enough. And I was like, I'm making a joke at our expense. Oh, no. We heard it. No. And I was like, are we that? First off, when did we get this stupid?
People hear keywords. They hear keywords and they react.
I think it's and I've been thinking about it for a while since it happened, and it just feels like, and I hate to just bring it tangential, but it feels like technology is to blame. It feels like everything in our brains is just so sped up now. Everything's just like, oh, this is what it is. Let's react this way. That's all. Because I did the same. I did a college last night at SUNY Oneota, and my college set now starts with me just talking about. I do like 15 minutes on what happened at Columbia. And I tell the joke within the set, and because I've contexted it with, this is the joke that I told, and then I say, if you think about it, it's fairly progressive. Like, I explain the joke, and then it's like, oh, right, okay, that's what is being said. But I think we just have to slow people down, and I think technology has played a huge role in, like, how fast people have come to process things.
The gist of the joke is a defense of being gay, essentially, by saying, if it was a choice, you wouldn't make it.
Right.
Because you're the source of
if you're logical,
ridicule and whatever else. Yeah, right. You wouldn't choose to be black if you had a choice because you're going to be discriminated against.
Right.
It's in defense of that, obviously.
But I wasn't entitled to make it.
Ooh, this is crazy. What's your nationality?
I'm Indian.
Do you get any woke points for that? I don't know. I feel like you guys are doing too good.
Yeah, I always contend that I think we're... I mean, there's a huge subset of... in terms of, like, wealth gap, like, between the richest Asians and the poorest, that's the biggest disparity in America. But I think as a whole, we're doing okay. And so it's...
Are you saying amongst Indians?
No, amongst Asian Americans. Asian Americans as a whole. I'm not sure what the Southeast Asian subset is like, but amongst Asians as a whole, like, the biggest wealth gap is between Asians. So, like, the poorest Asians do a lot worse relative to their rich peers.
For Italians or Irish, not as big a chasm is what you're saying?
Exactly, and that's because Asians are doing so well as a whole.
I feel like Asians are kicking ass in this country.
We're doing pretty well.
I feel like if this country, like if you take countries and you go, everyone's an athlete, let's say, but this is your sport. Because in this country, you focus on education, you focus on family, you just fucking rise to the top. Now, if you're in China or Russia, I don't know if that helps. Maybe if you're in Central America and you got to be hooked up with the drug cartel, like, you being family oriented and focused on education is not going to get you to run the Medellin drug cartel.
Right.
But this country is sort of wired for Asians, per se, who do have a focus on education and family, well, and that's why there's a lot of success.
I've also traced it to, like, a lot of it. I've also looked at this just as, like, anecdotally and, like, read one or two books about why Asians do so well. It's like, in the 60s, there was LBJ lifted the Asian American Exclusion Act. And when that happened, it was sort of merit-based immigration only, and there was all these jobs in, like, places like Kansas and Alabama and bumblefuck places where no one else wanted to be. At the same time, in India, there was a glut of people who had educations but no jobs to implement, to take in India. And so all of them came over here and just... You ever meet a doctor in Kansas that's just an Indian guy? It's like, how the fuck did you end up as a gastroenterologist in, like, Mississippi? And it's because that's where the jobs were. There was no gastroenterologists here. There was plenty of Indians in India that were willing to do it, and they just flew over here and came over. And that sort of trickled down to...
I got an idea for your next role.
Oh, shit.
We're going to reprise... Michael J. Fox's Doc Bollywood.
Oh.
Come on now. Wow. Asian guy moves to Bumblefuck.
Car breaks down in Delhi.
Plastic surgeon, big time Beverly Hills, but the car breaks down in Delhi.
I'm going to get a vest.
You got to help kids with a cleft palate and the weird stuff. Now you're not doing boob jobs anymore for That's rich good. Women.
Oh, this is going to be great.
Doc Bollywood. Wow. What do we think that thing did on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, it can't be very high, right?
It's charming.
It can't, but we loved Michael J. Fox back then.
45.
Only 40, if 45. My character can sing the Beatles will...
That'd be nice. I don't know how much that's going to cost to clear, but yeah, if we could do a couple of Beatles songs.
45.
I'll go 45.
Oh.
I mean, it's... Wow. Look, it's probably rotten, but it's not 10.
You guys
I shot it at 45. That was copyright.
Jeannie, you know how the game works.
Are we really playing right now? Okay, well, 55.
How much more effort is it to say 46?
Okay, I'll be that guy. I'll one-up Brian by one. No, I'm going to say 55.
55?
I know this was Price is Right rules. Sorry.
No, it's not.
We're just having a friendly conversation.
No, I'll try to guess right off. 55.
Please say 45.
Oh, shut the
fuck up. Nimesh? On Rotten Tomatoes, Doc Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Let's pick a percentage.
Score.
89, man.
Wow.
Oh, bold. I'm
going to
go.
Indian reviewers are coming in, man.
I'm going low, but not that low. This is Michael J. Everyone loves Michael J. 51? What did you say?
55.
I'll go 51. All right.
Whoa.
50. Oh, wait. 69. Sorry.
Wow.
69.
Woo.
That's a weird... That's alarmingly high for this kind of movie. It's also weird that this kind of movie is quite a bit lower with the people. Normally, this is like the critics give it a 34 and people go, 71. I thought it was funny.
I've got to be honest.
Silly romantic
I thought you
comedy.
Were just pitching a remake of Back to the Future.
In some ways.
Doc Bollywood.
What the fuck?
You're a very successful Beverly Hills plastic surgeon.
Uh-huh.
There's a messy divorce. You have a kind of come to Jesus moment. No. No, no.
Come to Dinesh.
Come to Dinesh.
Come to Ganesh.
Come to Ganesh.
Sorry. Come to Ganesh. No. You're getting divorced. There's a chick who's yelling at you because she wants to go from a D cup to a G cup.
Uh-huh.
Your mom calls and said your dad has passed away. You have to get on a plane.
Uh-huh.
You go back to what town are you from?
Ahmedabad.
There you go. I was going to say that. You go there while you're walking from the airport. You got your sunglasses on. You're on your cellular phone and whatnot. You see the little poor kids with all the defects and lips, you know, stuck
Hair
to
lips.
Their nostrils and everything. And you're like brushing them off. But at some point, you lock eyes with one of them and realize you could be making a difference.
If every Indian doctor went and felt that way, the world would be an entirely different place. But I'm sure every Indian doctor goes to India and is like, we ain't ever come back to this place.
Right. But you don't – that's act one. That's act one. But in Doc Bollywood, you do go back.
You have a change of heart.
Oh, man.
You have a change of heart.
Why?
Well, I don't know. We got to beat it out. We can't make your character
just the elevator pitch,
a greedy douche.
You're the writer.
I'm writing this?
No, you're starring.
You're a writer.
I'll fall in love with a light-skinned Indian lady.
Light-skinned. That's right. That's right.
And she's like, you have to help all these people.
Or we can cast a dark-skinned white lady.
Ooh.
Probably easier.
It's got to be Priyanka.
It's Priyanka Chopra. Yeah. No, man.
Yeah, they're all trying to lighten themselves.
She's done.
It's
you
a thing,
guys know
right?
those things?
Yeah. There's creams and cosmetic
yes.
stuff to do it, yeah.
Fair and Lovely. The biggest,
Fair and Lovely.
The worst thing that happened in
you know,
India forever.
We,
I mean, there's a lot of bad things.
We like to... We like to make fun of this country or sort of flog ourselves for being racist all the time. Like we're the only people, we invented racism. Mm-hmm. Like we're the only ones or whatever. Plenty of other countries quietly up to their own shit.
Yeah.
When it that falls into this department.
Oh, that's, I mean, yeah. India is no bastion of like a perfect society. India's got its huge, I mean, Narendra Modi's existence is proof that. India is also as backwards as America is, if not more.
I wonder if we could figure out the perfect shade for a woman, because every white chick I know is hitting a tan salon.
Oh.
The Indian chicks are putting the Michael Jackson's cream on to try to lighten it up a little bit. Fair and Lovely. What? There's got to be a sweet spot. See, that's why I think Brazil and that caramel-colored ass, I think that's the. I think in terms of humanity,
that's
the
what
sweet.
We're all going for. Mm.
Well, Sissy Spacek, Shirley Hemphill, you know what I mean? We want to meet in the middle. Are those names?
We'll find out soon enough when everyone starts fucking. And
yeah, I think we're on our way.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, Shrouda Turin, Sissy Spacek, Shirley Hemphill.
Mm-hmm.
Quick, get a quick survey around the office. See if anyone knows those reference
well,
points.
Well, Shirley Hemphill is my favorite drink.
We decided that's Yoo-hoo and Courvoisier.
Yeah.
Wow.
You got thrown off the stage at Columbia for
Courvoisier.
That.
And you, is Shirley Hemphill. Come on. I should get more recognition for my brilliance.
That's pretty good.
It is a good drink. All right. Oh, you don't know Shirley Hemphill, is there?
Oh,
when we show you a picture of Shirley Hemphill, you'll know. So
all I know is it's a drink right now.
Off the... off the stage at Columbia.
Yes, sir.
But you're playing college. So a lot of guys are like, I'm not going back to play Sunset.
A, I want the money. And B, when I... So after I did... After Columbia happened, 3 months later, I'd already signed up to do the NACA National Conference thing.
What's that?
NACA is where you go showcase to a bunch of colleges. And I figured it's like 3,000 students.
Oh, I believe if you saw the series Crashing...
Yeah,
which is not on the air anymore, but which we love with Pete Holmes, they sort of cover that whole convention. It's
right.
kind of, I didn't, as a comedian, didn't even know about it.
Yeah, so it was my first time going, and it was 3 months after Columbia had happened, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck this is going to be, because I'm either banned on all college campuses, or too hot to touch, or everyone's like, we want you to come talk shit at our school. So I went, and luckily it had been 3 months, so I had around... some 3 months like write just material about what had happened, and on top of that I was the host of the showcase that I was on, meaning I just went first, did my act, and then brought everyone else up. And it's good, I think, in the show, and Crashing Pete was the same role, but that you get the most amount of time to like do whatever you want. So I went up and I just did 15 minutes on the event itself, and half the room was like, fuck this dude, and the other half was like, we can't wait to meet him after the after the show. And it was that's all I could do, is confront it head on, because most colleges I assume would Google who they're bringing at this point. So
it sounds like a pressure packed environment, getting up there in front of like potential buyers and basically dancing for the man. Like this is not a comedy club with drinks flowing and you know, it's midnight show or anything. This is like a weird, sterile environment,
It's 5 p.m. in the afternoon. There's 1,000 college kids and like their advisors and what have you sitting in a room that is basically a warehouse. It's not designed for comedy. It's designed to be a convention hall.
Right.
And you go up and I'm just like, all right, well, I'm first. And I say, you guys hear about this comedian that was kicked off stage at Columbia University? No, you haven't? Well, I know the story quite well because the comedian was me. And then you just hear, oh, shit. And then I retell the story.
It strikes me that comedy is more difficult when people are sitting on folding chairs. I feel like that's a marker for a more difficult comedic environment.
Yeah, bright lights.
Yes. We have a picture of Shirley Hemphill, ready? Oh.
Now I know who you're talking about.
Now we know. All right. So,
yeah, Cavassier and Yoo-Hoo.
That's right. Somebody listening to me.
We got a lot of bartenders listening.
Yes, but we also have mostly customers. The next time you're at an airport or a Ramada Inn or any place that has a bar, please earnestly order that and make sure the bartender is on his heels. You mean like, oh, come on, you know.
Everybody knows.
Shirley Temple?
No. Come on, man. Shirley Hemphill.
Are you saying Temple?
Oh, come on. How long have you been a bartender?
I've been a bartender here for 3 years. No one's ever ordered.
Just to be clear.
Really? I bet if you ask your bartender friends, they would all know what it is. Anyway.
Mitch, you know what, Shirley? What's the name again?
Don't worry about it. Just get the Crevassier.
Actually, in the past, you used to say Yoo-Hoo and Hennessy.
Oh, Hennessy. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Let's go Hennessy. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do Hennessy and Yoo-Hoo. Somebody please order that within the sound of my voice. And see what we can do. Now, look, chocolate milk will work.
In a pinch.
Yes. You can substitute quick, Nestle Quick Out.
Why not?
If they have. They'll probably have it floating around somewhere in the back, especially if it's like a restaurant and their kids around or something like that.
Who posted that?
So this is Dave Constantine in April did use the Nestle Quick. He put Nesquik, Hennessy, and topped with whipped cream and a brandy cherry.
He says it's a delightful dessert cocktail.
That's like a real drink.
Yeah, 1 ounce Hennessy, 3 ounce Nesquik, topped with whipped cream and brandy cherry.
Is the next photo him fighting a parole officer?
Dawson drinks one of those in the morning, one in the afternoon.
And a sensible dinner.
All right. So, you wrote for the Oscars?
I did. That
for,
was my
when Chris Rock hosted?
That was my first writing job.
How was that? How'd that come about?
So I used to run a show in Brooklyn, a stand-up show called Broken Comedy with my friends Mike Denny and Michael Che. And it was in the back room.
Michael Che of SNL fame.
Yes. And Mike Denny of Pepto-Bismol jingle fame. True story. He wrote the rap jingle for the old one, like the one of the originals, nausea, heartburn, indigestion. That was like a rap jingle for it. And he wrote it,
circa
forever ago. He's I think I would say he's like 40, so he's a bit older than I am. But this was pre-comedy for him. But so 2015, we were like a hot show in Brooklyn, and Chris was coming to see Langston Kerman. Another comic who ended up writing on the Oscars, but Chris was late, so Langston couldn't go up, and I'm like, okay, well, it's my show, I'm gonna go up now. And then as I'm deciding to go up, Chris walks in, I'm like, now I fucking have to go up.
Right.
And Matchless is notoriously a very difficult room, and for myself especially, because as a host I'll just fuck around and just bomb and eat a dick and
booths or folding chairs.
Met wooden folding chairs.
So that's tough.
Yeah. So, but a perfect room for comedy. And I go up, and luckily Kevin McCaffrey went up before me and just set the room up and destroyed. And so I went up after that, and I told my first joke about, I think Cecil the Lion was in the news at the time.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I don't care about lions. I have four chickens today. And for whatever reason, that hit, and I heard Chris laugh. And I sort of just blacked out and did like 10 minutes. And after that, he told me I was funny. 3 months later, I got an email saying, hey, Chris wants you to write for the Oscars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus, how come that never happened to me?
You did write for the Oscars.
Oh, that's right. Tell Nimesh we don't like black. Just talk to him about blacked out, the term blacked out.
Yeah, it's problematic.
It's problematic.
And we just
need to kind of stop what you're doing.
We were nice enough to invite you here.
Go ahead and pot his mic down.
And we're going to go ahead and have to ask him to kill that, cancel Nimesh Patel, and thank you, excuse you, goodbye.
Yeah, blacked out is kind of a no-fly zone around here. Wow, what a dream scenario.
Oh, like, it was nuts.
Like, and this isn't a, I wrote for the Oscars too, because it was like Jimmy was hosting the Oscars, and I was like, oh, hey, do you want some jokes? And he was like, if you have to. And that's kind of how we worked out. But like, this is.
He didn't pick you out of the chorus.
This is this is a true kind of double blind taste test here. Yeah. You know, he just stumbled upon you and went, that guy brings it.
I attribute most of my career to luck.
Yeah.
And just sort of, because that was my first real writing job, right? Where I'd written a few things before, but it wasn't anything that the Guild was paying me for. You know, it was just, Chris was like, you're going to come. I was like, this fucking is. And the small, it was a, it's like a 20 person room. But there was like four or five of us who were, it was like our first crazy thing, except for Michelle Wolf. Michelle Wolf was also in the room, but she was already writing on set at the time. But
were you, how did the pitching process work for Chris in that world?
Well, we all sat at a table in a giant room, and we'd all sit around. And for the first, at first it was, we were like working on what his monologue would be a little bit. And then we would pitch like sketch ideas and commercial ideas remotely. And then once
the remotely, like email them in.
Email and stuff. Like he had right. two of his head writers would just filter everything through. Mm-hmm. And then once the nominations came out and there were no black nominees, it was like, oh shit, this whole thing.
I forgot about
that. This right. whole thing just changed because up until that point, I'm watching every movie. I'm like, oh, yeah. What jokes can we make about Mad Max this year, you know? Right. And but then the no nominees thing happened. I was like, oh, all right, well, Chris has this under control. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like now it's like, all right, we're all sitting in a room. And he had like a framework of what he wanted to be doing, and we would pitch jokes and ideas and what have you, and then we'd run to the store, and he'd run it.
Comedy store.
Yeah, the store, and then...
It's funny when he said, run to the store, like, the joke store's open! Grab everything off the shelves!
Oh, we'd write during the day.
So he'd go out to the comedy store that night,
yeah,
and he'd work those premises, those jokes.
Yeah, and work that that monologue. Once it became clear the monologue was the only thing anyone's going to be paying attention to, mm-hmm. he really honed in. It was like, we got to nail this and knock it out of the park.
How was that? Because I've oftentimes kind of thought about that, because when I was writing for Jimmy doesn't do stand-up, so it's like you don't get the chance to put it up on its feet, mm-hmm. you know, that super valuable experience. Now, Jimmy can vet it in advance and put it in a prompter and it still works, but I'm saying you get to go witness it.
Yeah.
The way the process works is, I guess you just come out and say, like, I'm hosting the Oscars, here's some stuff I'm screwing around with.
Yeah, that,
you know,
was,
bear with me.
That was it. I'm hosting the Oscars, and it was such a, for Chris, the perfect host to host in that situation, because it's so natural for him to talk about race in that in that situation.
Did you have a situation, which is bound to happen, which is you have a joke that you like, you pitch it, mm-hmm. they do it, but they screw it up a little bit because it's a bunch of new material. It's impossible not to, you know, screw things up a little bit or drop something or whatever. It doesn't get the reaction. Then the person comes off stage and goes, all right, we're not doing that one. And you're like,
that wasn't the joke.
Do
that
it
could,
right.
Yeah, that could work.
I bet we could make this work.
Unfortunately and fortunately not, that didn't happen. I had, I think, two or three jokes that I pitched to him that he did better.
Oh, really?
You know, I think I pitched something about acting's not brave. Brave is drinking a glass of water in Flint, Michigan. That's brave.
Right.
But I think he changed it to acting's not brave. Brave is drinking a glass of Kool-Aid in Flint, Michigan. And just that specificity, I was like,
right.
Oh, shit, that makes it exponentially better.
Right. You can't make the Kool-Aid without the water.
Right, right. And it's just like such a much funnier thing. And some, I think.
Can you pitch him my Shirley Hemphill joke?
No, yeah, for sure. I already wrote it down. Chris, you got Hennessy and you.
Sarah Silverman did tell me, she goes, I love that joke of yours that you can't do, but you got to pitch it to Chris Rock and he could do it. And I was like, I'm going to go do it. And it didn't get any reaction, but
it's such a specific reference.
It's a joke. It's not Shirley Hemphill joke.
Oh, oh.
It's the black, I know black men are angry, which is, because the world's fastest people are the world's slowest pedestrians. And if you held the Olympics in a crosswalk every year, there'd be three Scandinavian guys up on the podium. It's the passive aggressiveness of the slow black man walking in front of the people can technically move the fastest are going the slowest when they're in front of your hood. And it's because they're angry. I get it. And she's
no
like,
reaction.
She's like, you got to give that to Chris, but it's a good joke, but don't give it, but not for you.
Yeah. Are we going to cancel Adam after this? Or?
Yes. All right. You also write for SNL, so says Max Pat.
I wrote for SNL for season 43. I was there for
Jeez, it's so crazy. We were just talking about this yesterday.
It's like about to be 45.
Season 45. Yeah, we're coming on to?
Yeah, two seasons ago.
Mm. One season there?
One and done.
How was that experience?
It was stressful, but not from the work environment. It was stressful from the fact that I was reading the... I wrote an update, so I was reading the news constantly. It was the first year that Trump was president for the first full year, and my brain sort of broke just like... I cannot read news anymore. I hate.
Especially, what do you? Like, what do you
it's
do?
Too much information.
Now, so I'm kind of telling everybody physically. I was saying to Dr. Drew the other day. I said, how many gyms were there nationwide in like 1955? It's like three. Mm-hmm. Jekyll Lane, three right. gyms. Like now, there's a gym on every corner. There's a Pilates. There's a spin class. There's a yoga. There's a soul. Everything. Right? Why? Well, we're sedentary and we have four zones of air conditioning, and everyone's Ubering
two
everywhere. Right? And so we figured out we need to get something. Or we're all going to get fat and atrophy.
Right.
There's a mental component to this that we've forgotten about. Everyone's just sitting home watching CNN and going out of their mind. And it's like, I'm telling everyone, go out and garden, man.
Yeah.
Go out, pick up a shovel and go outside, or get in the kitchen and make lasagna, or shut off the news and go build a treehouse. We got to do that.
I got really into plants.
Really?
Yeah, I've 30 houseplants.
Damn. And
really?
It was some kind of peaceful thing, and it brings peace into your house. And I can directly correlate it to my time at the show just from reading the news constantly. Because before that, I would read the news and I would pick and choose what I had to. But when it's just a flood of information coming at you because you have to digest it and then write jokes about it, I was like, I cannot keep up with this. It's too much and it's pointless at some point. Like right now, I just read longform.org, which is just long form journalism stories, and I'll keep up on some headlines, but outside, like, I don't give a shit what Trump said today, or I won't tomorrow or the next day.
It's a kind of a morphine drip that it's not good big picture, and we're in charge of the button, and we just keep tapping it and tapping it and tapping it, and it's ruining us. And people need to literally go garden. Like, you must go outside, or in the house, there's a sort of internal version of that with houseplants, but like, just go physically engage in some project and some movement. You could volunteer too, but it's like, go get yourself out of your environment and go get your hands in the soil and break a little sweat and be at peace and involve yourself in nature. Or go, for me, I do building projects. Like, you just go fabricate something, go build something. Like, you must do that.
Go back to human nature.
Yes. Yeah. The people are so, and by the way, this is act two of Doc Bollywood. He realizes he's on the treadmill. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As he's on the treadmill.
He literally sees a picture of himself. What happens is he's staring up at the TV. We have a Trump feel alike up there, We don't want to get sued, but you know what I mean? All of a sudden, there's a power outage, lightning strike, a surge. The treadmill stops. He sees his own reflection in the now blank TV
set. Black mirror.
And he's like, how can I exercise if this machine isn't running for me? And he's like, he has this realization. I'm supposed to be out hiking myself.
He sees kids running.
He sees kids with a stick.
Cliff Pallets.
Cliff Pallet kid with the hoop and the stick running and going.
And having a blast.
And he has to get back to his roots.
Act two, Dot.
Yes, that's act two.
All right.
Do you think we can get Kumail Nanjiani to play the lead?
I'm right here, man.
Oh, this is uncomfortable. This is uncomfortable.
He needs a buddy.
He needs a funny friend.
Kumail could be the one who convinces me to stay.
Yes.
That's right, the wacky friend.
And we'll put a little Bollywood in it, and he's like the hitch for me in the...
Right. He is the Indian side. We also need a kind of Tom Arnold side who shares an office next to yours, who sells jewelry or something. And he's like, where are you going? There's chicks all over the place. You get paid to feel their titties. He's trying to suck you back into the Beverly Hills world.
Oh, that sounds... It'll be Just Sewell. You know who that is?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you got to look him up on Instagram. This is an Indian engineer who's just a badass.
We need this guy to be white.
Yeah, this guy needs to be.
Because he's negative. You see what I'm saying?
He's the leg you leave behind.
He's the devil.
He's the ugly white American who's saying, don't leave Beverly Hills behind. You know
Hank Azaria.
Okay.
He's busy playing Apu. Yeah.
Would the Indian guy, can we put lightning cream on Hank Azaria? Yeah, would that be offensive?
Make him fair and lovely.
Let's make Hank Azaria fair and lovely and have him play the evil white guy.
We're ignoring the obvious answer. Gina said that he's the devil. Mm.
Tom Arnold is the devil.
Oh, Tom Arnold. Yeah.
There you go.
The devil.
He pitched himself.
All right, let me hit the Castrol Edge. You can tweet us at Castrol. Sorry, you can tweet us at Adam Carolla Show with the hashtag Castrol Challenge with your questions for Castrol Challenge. Brought to you by Castrol Edge, formulated with fluid titanium technology. Reduces friction, maximizes engine performance. Three times!
Tom Arnold is the devil.
Tom Arnold is the devil. Tom Arnold is the devil. Candyman. So, three times better against viscosity breakdown, leading full synthetics. You got a question, Max Pata?
Yes. At Phillyman on Instagram wants to know, hashtag Castrol Challenge, what car does Adam plan on buying next?
I had thoughts about...
like a daily driver or like your next collectible?
I'm going to go collectible because daily driver, that's neither here nor there for me. I was watching the race at the Monterey Historics, and they have the Trans Am group, the late 60s, early 70s pony car wars. They called a bunch of Mustangs and Camaros and stuff. I don't know if you can find any of that footage, but the Trans Am group, those guys are like big V8s, pretty thin tires. They're all like kind of the same car, and they're just throwing those things around, man. I mean, they're just hauling ass in those cars. And the thing that makes it kind of cool is they're all kind of the same, which is in my group, I have all different kinds of cars, mm-hmm. and there's a kind of a very, there's speed. Some cars are up 200 horsepower mm-hmm. from the other car. These guys are all equal, and they're all just driving the wheels off them, and it's the I don't know, 66 to 71 Trans Am group or whatever it is. But I was thinking a Trans Am race car. I'm not an American Ooh. Car guy, but it'd be a good group to run with. They're kind of bulletproof, big kind of American cars, kind of exciting, good run group, and they run on Saturday. So I'm gonna go Trans Am race group car, and I'd like a Mustang. But I'll take a Javelin too, maybe, and not a notchback, you know, hatchback.
Obviously,
type. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Find that group or something, an image.
I'm looking.
All right, thank you, Castrol Edge. All right, we'll I'll buy you a minute because we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll do the news with Gina and Nemesh.
There's a GT.